This is a two-chapter in Isaiah story that is just fascinating. And there's another three chapters in the Old Testament. In 2 Kings 18 through 20 and chapter 32 of 2 Chronicles. It is a fascinating story. And we will be doing this for the next several weeks. And I want to read today from chapter 35 of the book of Isaiah, just the first 10 verses, and do a rather lengthy introduction to this and to see how important it is. Because as I'd mentioned, when God gives something five chapters in the Bible, it's important. One concept. He really wants to get something across here. And we'll be looking at what it is that he's trying to get across because of the volume of the material that he provides. So let's read from Isaiah chapter 35, verses 1 to 10. Now it came to pass in the 14th year of King Hezekiah that Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came up against all the fortified cities of Judah and took them. And the king of Assyria sent Rabshakeh from Lachish to Jerusalem unto King Hezekiah with a great army. And he stood by the conduit of the upper pool in the highway of the fuller's field. Then came forth unto him Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, who was over the household, and Shebna, the scribe, and Joah, the son of Asaph, the recorder. And Rabshakeh said unto him, Say ye now to Hezekiah, Thus saith the great king, the king of Assyria, What confidence is this wherein thou trusteth? I say, thy counsel and strength for war are but vain words now. On whom dost thou trust, that thou hast rebelled against me? Behold, thou trustest upon the staff of this bruised reed, even upon Egypt, whereon if a man lean, it will go into his hand and pierce it. So is Pharaoh king of Egypt to all that trust on him? But if thou say unto me, We trust in Jehovah our God, is not that he whose high places and whose altars Hezekiah hath taken away and hath said to Judah and to Jerusalem, Ye shall worship before this altar? Now therefore I pray thee, give pledges to my master, the king of Assyria, and I will give thee 2,000 horses, if thou be able on thy part to set riders upon them. How then canst thou turn away the face of one captain of the least of my master's servants, and put the trust on Egypt for chariots and for horsemen? And am and I now come up without Jehovah against this land to destroy it? Jehovah said unto me, Go up against this land, destroy it. Then said Eliakim and Shebna and Joah unto Rabshakeh, Speak, I pray thee, unto thy servants in the Syrian language, where we understand it, and speak not to us in the Jews' language, in the ears of the people that are on the wall. But Rabshakeh saith, Hath my master sent me to thy master and to thee to speak these words? Hath he not sent me to the men that sit on the wall to eat their own dung and to drink their own water with you? Now, this is an interesting passage, and I'll help to explain it here by giving a brief introduction, kind of complex, but it encompasses the whole two chapters that we'll be looking at, and we'll go into it in detail. This is a very, very long two-chapter story. And again, we're only seeing two chapters of the whole five, about an awesome time, an invasion of Sennacherib, who was the Assyrian king, general, a leader, if you will, and his entire army got decimated coming against Jerusalem. All of them died. The basic story, again, is found in 2 Kings 18, verses 13 to all the way through 20, 19, and the whole chapter of 2 Chronicles 32. Hezekiah was a good king, a very good king. Matter of fact, the Bible gives him such homage that the text there reveals his stature before God, that there was no king like him before and no king like him after. I mean, he gets even more accolades than David. And it's incredible what he did. His father was a complete despot, Ahaz, and his son was just as bad. Just as bad. As parents, we have only so much control over our children. Only so much. Hezekiah was a great, great king. And the reason for placing this in this particular place in the book of Isaiah is because there was a theme that we went over several sessions ago about the destruction of Jerusalem and the downfall of the enemies of God. And it was primarily discussing the end of the Great Tribulation, called the Campaign of Armageddon. Hezekiah's faith and his righteousness were just impeccable. He did everything he could for God. God permitted the Assyrians to invade his kingdom for a very specific reason. It wasn't because of Hezekiah. It was because of the people. Hezekiah, again, was a righteous, God-fearing man. And his father was horrible. His father had built the what gets termed as the high places in the Old Testament. These were hills upon which they had placed idols, and there was sexually immoral activities taking place there, as if it was something God wanted. God didn't want idolatry. He doesn't want sexual immorality. They had temple prostitutes that had gone there. I mean, these high places are just terribly corrupt, idolatrous places. Well, Ahaz, his father, put them up. Hezekiah took them down. But the people had grown accustomed to this stuff. And it's harder to get the people to turn from immoral behavior to moral behavior in one generation. You know, Isaiah is telling the story to show you what the people were like. Not Hezekiah, but the people. So God brings this Assyrian group to Jerusalem. Now bear in mind what the Assyrians had done at the request of God, because God gave them the notion, if you will, to conquer the northern 10 tribes. So they came from Mesopotamia in the east. They came over about 722 to the north, and Israel had divided long since by then in 10 tribes in the north and 2 in the south. And the Assyrians conquered the tribes in the north. And what they ended up doing was carting the people away, bringing in people from other geographic regions to marry in with the Jewish women to produce half-breeds, which would be an anathema to the Jews. And they didn't want those people to rise up against them again, so they were going to change the structure of that population. So then Sennacherib, after this, he comes to the south. He's all fresh with his victory. He says, hey, I'm going to keep going. So he keeps going in the south. And there's 46 cities down there, and he claims to have gotten them. He claims to have conquered them. They were walled cities that were protecting, actually, kind of a barrier protecting Jerusalem. And all of them fell to him. The toughest one and the last one was one called Lachish. And that's where he set up his camp, if you will, or his headquarters, to go down farther in the south and get Jerusalem. Jerusalem's the prize. There's no question about it. It's the absolute prize. It is God's city. It has always been God's city. He gave it to the Jews to hold on to it. And there have been a number of times when they've lost it. Now, in Hezekiah's 14th year of reigning, now let that sink in for a minute, because he had 14 years to get rid of the high places, get rid of the idolaters, to restore the temple worship to what it should be. And that's when Sennacherib invaded, 701 BC. And according to the Assyrians' account, he said he got all 46 of them. It's doubtful that he got all 46, but he claimed to have gotten major victories. And one of the things we're going to see here is a pagan, prideful man overstating what he did, making it look better than it really was, twisting the words, twisting the concepts to get his way. The capital of the Assyrians was Nineveh, and his palace, Sennacherib's palace, was there. The walls were just lined with sculptured slabs. It was a beautiful, beautiful place. Much of it is in the British Museum from excavations and archaeological digs that were done. They're no longer permitted. After the 1930s, Iraq is in control of the area. They wouldn't let anybody in anymore. They got tired of seeing all their antiquities taken out. The Oriental Institute at the University of Chicago has got some fascinating material from Assyria and Babylonia, if you ever want to go there. And early in Sennacherib's reign, Hezekiah revolted against him because Sennacherib had made a deal with Ahaz. Ahaz wanted trust, not in God, but in man. One of the worst things he could have done. He even went to Egypt to try and get trust, to get help. Hezekiah did too. The campaign of Sennacherib against Israel and others was inscribed on what are called steels or clay cylinders. These things are still available. They're in the British Museum, and there's a copy at the Oriental Institute in Chicago. And I put a picture of what they look like, where the king of Assyria would have his scribes write the story that he dictated. And on these, he mentions Sidon, Beth Dagon, and other cities as just capitulated to him. And he calls these great battles near the city of Daku, which is El-Takan in the book of Joshua. And he talks about his armed forces were aided by Egyptian bowmen and chariots. And he claims the terrifying splendor of his majesty overcame Hezekiah. In addition to 30 talents, and it's supposed to be the typo there, 800 talents of silver. He says he gave other valuables to the Assyrian as tribute. And the following is a direct quote from the cylinder. It wasn't 800 talents of silver, it was 300, but he claimed it to be 800. You get a different story in the Book of the Kings. Now look at the quote that he's got here. As to Hezekiah the Jew, he did not submit to my yoke. I laid siege to his strong cities, walled forts, and countless small villages, and conquered them by means of well-stamped earth ramps and battering rams, brought near the wall by foot soldiers. Himself I made a prisoner in Jerusalem, his royal residence, like a bird in a cage. I still increased the tribute and presents to me as overlord. Hezekiah himself did send me later to Nineveh, my lordly city, together with 30 talents of gold, 800 talents of silver, precious stones, antimony, large cuts of red stones, couches inlaid with ivory, Nimedu chairs inlaid with ivory, elephant hides, ebony wood, boxwood, and all kinds of valuable treasures, his own daughters and concubines. This is a vast overstatement without saying he conquered Hezekiah, because he didn't conquer Hezekiah. But the way he keeps his pride up is to say, I put him in that cage of his palace and kept him there. It's interesting the way he characterizes this, because nothing could be further from the truth as we open this story a little farther. The Assyrians were ruthless, warlike people. They just lived for the glory of war. And they were not like the Romans. They didn't. See, what the Romans instituted was imperialism. And the Assyrians were not imperialistic. They just conquered people and slaughtered them and impregnated their women and took them as slaves and left the place devastated. And in the case of the north of Israel, they brought in people from other regions to intermarry to create a new race, which became known as the Samaritans. They had a highly advanced war machine, highly advanced siege engines and battering rams and catapults. And they had these movable stairways on wheels that they would push up to the walls. And hundreds of thousands of soldiers and big war chariots. I mean, that's all they lived for was war, just war. And they tortured the people that they would capture to make an example of them. And they were just horrible guys here. One of the things that they did was they mastered psychological warfare, putting fear into their intended conquered people to get them to weaken. And we're going to see that here is what they do. So the text moves on to the invasion. Verses 1 to 3 in chapter 35 read, "Now it came to pass in the 14th year of King Hezekiah that Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came against all the fortified cities of Judah and took them. And the king of Assyria sent Rabshakeh from Lachish to Jerusalem unto King Hezekiah with a great army. And he stood by the conduit of the upper pool in the highway of the fuller's field. Then came forth unto him Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, who was over the household, and Shebna, the scribe, and Joah, the son of Asaph, the recorder." Now, earlier in the sixth year of Hezekiah, that was like 8 years earlier, Sennacherib took the northern kingdom, as I said. He had conquered it. And he took away all these people. And then he came down into Judah, the southern kingdom, and he took a number of the cities. He didn't get all of them, as he claimed in his annals. Isaiah 37:8 says, no, he didn't get them. He thought to have taken all 46 of them, which was his intent. But what motivated him to stop was the tribute that Hezekiah did pay to him. That was the first part of the stop. A payment to somebody like this is not going to stop them. They want your money, and they want your life, and they want everything else too. So you can't provide anything like this and to get them to stop. It would be like akin to blackmail. You know, a blackmailer is somebody that is going to get something from you to stop from doing something, maybe telling a story about your past or something. And you expect as the victim, okay, I'll pay this guy and it's all over. No, that's just starting it. They see a source of money or a source of goods like this situation here and they just keep going. So you can't satisfy this. This guy was not going to get satisfied either by that tribute that Hezekiah gave him. As I said earlier, he set up his headquarters in Lachish. He had a large army surrounding Jerusalem, and he demanded its surrender through this one guy, Rabshakeh. This was an aggressive act of vengeance, and he wanted to subject Jerusalem to him as he had done with Ahaz, Hezekiah's dad. Now, he didn't come and conquer it like he was trying to do now, but Ahaz was off visiting him in Nineveh and praising him there. So the relationship was already there. He just hadn't conquered it yet. Then he was going to go to Egypt and he was going to conquer them too. So that was his strategy. And even though he had taken his money, he put the fear of this into Hezekiah. Now, the other two people that were with Rabshakeh aren't mentioned because they're not the primary speakers. The book of 2 Kings talks about two other guys that are with him. This is the primary speaker, though. This is the central character that Sennacherib had sent to put the fear of Sennacherib into the Jewish people and to convince them to give up now. And then when they didn't want to give up right away, then he tried to bribe, and that didn't work either. But what is so interesting, I tried to find a map for you to show you the location where this Rabshakeh started speaking to the Jewish people. It was just outside the wall of Jerusalem. He wasn't back a long way with a megaphone or something. He was right up there next to the wall, which is kind of adding insult to injury. I am so proud. I am so certain that you guys are going to be my victims. I'm going to come right up here and start shouting at you. And what you don't see in the early verses here, he's shouting at them in their own language. He's shouting at them in Hebrew. And there were a bunch of people up on the wall watching this stuff going on, seeing this massive army and seeing this guy come right up to the wall and start shouting. He was rude, he was aggressive, and he took the position that you're not going to survive because we are Assyrians and you are nothing. You're just a bunch of Jews and you are nothing. So just think of that. He's right outside the wall screaming at these people. Now, Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, who was over the household, and Shebna the scribe, and Joab, were sent by Hezekiah to meet them. So these guys come out of Jerusalem through the gates of the wall and are talking to Rabshakeh. He continues to shout, trying to talk directly to Hezekiah because he's sort of insulted that he's here to talk to the king as Sennacherib's emissary. And here he's talking to these three people. Well, I don't want to talk to you guys. And he starts insulting Hezekiah the way he talks about him. He doesn't give Hezekiah his proper title, but he gives his king, his general, Sennacherib, his proper title. And he just wants them to just capitulate. We're here. There's nothing you can do, so just give us the city. And let's look at the text of what he says. And Rabshakeh said unto them, say ye now to Hezekiah, thus saith the great king, the king of Assyria, What confidence is this wherein thou trustest? I say that counsel and strength of the war are but vain words now, on whom thou dost trust, that thou hast rebelled against me. Behold, thou trusted upon the staff of this bruised reed, even upon Egypt, whereon if a man leave, it will go into his hand and pierce it. So is Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to all that trust on him. But if thou say unto me, we trust in Jehovah our God, is not that he whose high places and whose altars Hezekiah had taken away and has said to Judah and to Jerusalem, ye shall worship before this altar? Now therefore, I pray thee, give pledges to my master, the king of Assyria, and I will give thee 2,000 horses, if thou art able on thy part to set riders upon them. How then canst thou turn away thy face of one captain of the least of my master's servants and put the trust on Egypt for chariots and for horsemen? And am I now come up without Jehovah against this land to destroy it? Jehovah said unto me, go up against this land and destroy it. So what he's doing here, first of all, he's insulting them. He's trying to talk directly to Hezekiah through these guys. He's calling himself this anointed guy of, and he's just insulting them. He's being very blunt and very insulting to these guys. Refers to his own king, though, the great king, the king of Assyria. So he's insulting this team, and he's saying to them, where have you placed your trust? Now, they have gone to Egypt in the past, the Jews had, and they never, ever have gotten any good things out of Egypt. The Nile River is lined with these reeds. They're very thin, you know, it's almost like papyrus. And what the Rabshakeh is saying, if you're going to trust in the Pharaoh, it's no better than trusting in a reed that won't stand up sharp enough to pierce your hand, but it's no, there's no substance to it. And he continues to insult them. He says, if you're going down there to have his horses and his chariots, they're not going to help you. He says, and if you're trusting in your God, Jehovah, he's not going to help you. As he told me to come here. Matter of fact, you have insulted him by taking down his high places. See, that's how he doesn't understand what Hezekiah did. Hezekiah did what God wanted because he was a righteous man. He got rid of the idolatries. He got rid of these things. And the Rabshakeh is thinking, well, wait a minute, we'll get him through disobeying his God. And he's, you know, he's saying that one of the things you did to disobey your God was you took down the high places. So he obviously doesn't know. And he's starting to wear thin on the Jews, but they're still scared. They're still scared. What is interesting about this is that there are a group of people on the wall. And the people that are on the wall are, one, the captains and the leaders that are watching this, and two, a group of people. The idea here was to put fear into those people so that they would cause a little civil war inside the walls of Jerusalem and push back on Hezekiah. Hey, wait a minute, this guy's way too strong. We know exactly what he's saying. He's speaking to us in our language. He's not using his language. He's saying our language. We understand what he's doing. And when he says that Jehovah sent me, there's credibility there because Jehovah sent them to the northern 10 tribes to punish them. So this is causing this psychological pre-preparation for their invasion to weaken the Jews. The Rabshakeh replies about these high places like they were actually put there by the Lord. Then he tries to strike a bargain. He says, look, we'll give you a lot of horses. He knew that there wasn't any horses in Israel. Horses were forbidden at that time. Don't mount up horses. says Deuteronomy 17, 16. Don't do it. They did it anyway. They tried to get him from Egypt. So he's offering them the horses because he knew that they'd gone to Egypt. So he says, maybe I'll offer them horses. That'll do it. That'll weaken them. Because he's thinking, you know, it'd be a whole lot easier if I can just get these guys to give up instead of me having to invade them. But we will, you know, and he shows them. He tells them of the cities that they've conquered and so on. His arguments, though, aren't getting very far. They haven't really affected anybody. So he's thinking, well, he's going to come up to Jerusalem with the help of God. That should do it. And that should put the fear into them. He wants to destroy Jerusalem. And he's saying, very emboldened, your God sent me. So we're going to close with these last two verses here as the story moves on, 11 and 12. Then said Eliakim and Shebna and Joah unto Rabshakeh, speak, I pray thee, unto thy servants in the Syrian language, for we understand it, and speak not to us in the Jews' language, in the ears of the people that are on the wall. But Rabshakeh said, hath my master sent me to thy master and to speak to thee these words? Hath he not sent me to the men that sit on the wall to eat their own dung and to drink their own water with you? So he's really crude, he's rude, he's impudent, but he understands psychology of what he's doing. He understands that he speaks to them in his own language. The people on the wall are going to be susceptible to this, and he's going to put the fear into them. There's lots of speculation about how he knew the Hebrew language, and there isn't any unanimity amongst any of the commentators, so it's fruitless even try and figure that out. But it's clear that's what he was doing. They were becoming agitated, and that was exactly what he wanted. Now, the emissaries from Hezekiah were trying to get him to stop speaking, and that just fueled him all the more. He said, oh, I'm irritating you. Great, I'll keep doing it. It's a diplomatic confrontation that these people on the wall were watching. He got louder. He got more aggressive, and he wanted the people to rebel against Hezekiah and surrender to the Assyrians. Then he talks about the fate of the people in Jerusalem if they didn't do this. He said, you're going to be doomed because there won't be any food here. We're going to conquer this place. You're going to eat your own dung and drink your own urine. That was an exaggerated picture because they had plenty of water and they had plenty of food. Hezekiah had built enormous numbers of waterways underground. He had really done a good job. So they were well fortified, but the Assyrians didn't know that because Hezekiah had kept it quiet. So their imagery here was to incite them, to get them to surrender, and get them to turn against Hezekiah if they could. Nothing could be further from the truth. They were not going to do it. And as we move through this story, this two-chapter story, we're going to see how they push back on the Assyrians. And they're scared. They are scared. And finally, Hezekiah goes to consult Isaiah and says, what can I do? And Isaiah shows him the path to God and to start trusting in God instead of your own circumstances. It's a fascinating story. We'll conclude it in a couple of weeks. Shall we pray?